Hey guys, welcome to The Bald Truth. 888-659-3727. Great to be here. Another Tuesday night doing the hair loss show. And I gotta tell you, man, sometimes when I listen to the blues, not sometimes, I think every time, and at all times, it makes me want to drink. And that's what I'm going to do tonight. So, cheers to everybody. Welcome to the show. Let me give out the phone number, 888-659-3727. I see Joe's laughing, so let's say hi to Joe. Tillman, who is live in our TBT studios in Vancouver. Joe, how are you, man?
Good, man. How are you?
I can't complain.
It doesn't look like you can. That's good.
You know what? Why should I? First of all, no one gives a shit, really.
No one gives a shit. Really.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And what do I got to complain about? I got to do the show every week.
Yeah.
You know, we
Which
have
is always fun.
People who actually appreciate what we do.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. You know, you read the negative stuff online sometimes and you're like, you know, I'm the type of guy who I embrace the haters.
What negative stuff?
Yeah, but exactly. But the incredible response that we get. If I were to just take the time to read some emails, and maybe I'll do that next week, of people who just write to thank us for what we do. I had a guy that wrote us. I think I sent it to you last week. Didn't want anything. Didn't have any questions.
Just wanted to say thanks. Yeah,
and
that's,
you know,
that's awesome.
It's a wonderful feeling, man.
It is.
You know,
I didn't tell you. I'm actually dealing with an SOS patient second opinion service that I do, where the guy actually said also thank you for the show. It was a nice little write up that he sent to me before we started talking about his case. But yeah, it's nice to be acknowledged. It's nice to know that we are making a difference and to hear from people that can benefit from the show.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And guys, if you're new to the program, don't know who I am, why I'm here, why this other guy on the other half of the screen is here. First of all, I'm a consumer advocate for men and women who are dealing with hair loss. I am the author of The Bald Truth and The Truth About Women's Hair Loss. I'm the founder of the American Hair Loss Association. And I'm a guy who has been dealing with hair loss for well over two decades. Now, if you're actually viewing this broadcast, if you're not listening on iTunes Radio or Stitcher Radio or all of the other audio resources that air this broadcast, and you're watching us through Guys from Queens Network or The Bald Truth or Daily Motion, or I'm not going to name them all, you're probably thinking, why are either of these guys talking about hair loss? Well, first of all, you know, I always believe it's important to provide full disclosure, especially for my new listeners and viewers. This is a quasi-sham. There's like a half a can of hairspray happening. I've been taking a medication that slowed or actually, you know, it didn't stop, but it really slowed the progression of my hair loss for, you know, the last two decades. And I paint the back of my head. Basically, I'm wearing makeup to hide the thinning areas of my scalp. And that's how I'm able to kind of pull off this relatively full-looking head of hair. But I feel extremely fortunate that I am in this position, that I made the right decisions, that I have, you know, lucked out both genetically and, again, to repeat myself every week, having the wherewithal to make certain decisions that didn't fuck me up.
Mm-hmm.
Joe is a guy who has been a hair loss sufferer since he was a kid, basically.
17 is when I was first alerted to my hair loss by someone else.
Yeah. And your guys had also 9 hair transplants.
You remember that. That's good.
I do. Been in the industry for well over a decade.
Yep.
Who is now working independently. As the, you know, he's known as the original hair transplant mentor. Mm-hmm. And he is now, I guess, officially a weekly on-air contributor to this broadcast.
Yeah.
And
it's been a blast.
It has been. It really has been. I have to tell you that the response has been extremely positive. Now, there's always negatives. There's always the guys that are like, they somehow think that I kicked Joe from Staten Island off the show, you know, which isn't true, by the way.
You fired him.
Yeah, you know? And they want to hear the news from Joe and all that stuff. But I would say that the vast majority of people who contact us are relieved to have someone that, you know, has the perspective that you have to be part of what we're offering. You know, in my perspective, I don't mean to cut you off, which I always do, but I'm so used to doing the show by myself for so many years. But, you know, my perspective is, you know, I'm an insider in the industry. I'm a hair loss sufferer who's been through the mill. I founded these organizations to try to kind of create a safer environment for men and women who are dealing with hair loss because the industry is so fucked up. I never worked for a clinic. I never worked in, you know, doing the day-to-day stuff that people have to do when they're working in a hair transplant clinic. You have.
Yeah.
You know, plus you're a hair transplant patient.
Recipient of bad hair transplant work, recipient of excellent hair transplant work. I can't count how many surgeries I've actually been involved in. And I don't mean like I was a technician, you know, actually helping, but I've filmed so many surgeries and I used to go back into the ORs and I would sit there and just watch and ask questions because I've always been fascinated by surgery to begin with. And I was certainly in a great position to learn. And I know so much about the surgery itself just from from being there so much and asking the questions I ask. And I feel very fortunate to have that type of experience under my belt because it helps me really understand what patients have been through, the good and the bad. And I know what doctors are talking about when they're talking about certain complications they run into, you know, great cases, easy cases, tough cases, everything in between. And so I feel like I've been blessed with this unique outlook on the industry, on patients, on clinics, on doctors, the whole gamut that I'm really happy to be able to bring to the show and not to mention the forums, Bald Truth Talk.
Well, you know, and I think for the most part, people appreciate that. I also, you know, we do get the occasional guy who, the cynic who basically looks at you as kind of like a former hair transplant salesperson.
Yeah.
As opposed to what you really were. And you really were a guy who consulted people, and as far as you guided people in what you believe to be the safest possible direction.
Look, I've always—
Can you favor, back off from your mic a little bit?
Yeah. I've always been in a position where I could always go down the road where I could start using the cheesy sales tactics, start pressuring people into having a procedure, you know, for whatever reason or using whatever technique. I tried to avoid doing that because I've been in a situation myself where I've had those options presented to me or those tactics presented to me. And not to mention the fact that I know that, you know, ever since the beginning, I've been a public figure. Even before I started working for a clinic, when I was just a patient sharing my story, you know, when I talk to people, there's always a chance that they might start, you know, sharing what they've learned from me. And I want to make sure that when people are asking me questions, that it's something that they can take with them and carry it on to someone else and it has some sort of weight to it. In other words, a valuable lesson people can take with them to learn and maybe educate someone else with.
Right. And the truth of the matter is, and that's, you know, really important stuff, but you also have to know that because of the position that you were in, there are people who would also take that information, whatever information you provided, and may have tried to twist it and put it out there online. So, I mean,
of course,
I will say that one thing about you, man, is that I have never heard – there's never been someone who's come to me over the years, and I get all the complaints. I get all the complaints about all the consultants from all the clinics, and no one has ever complained about the advice that you provided.
I'm glad
you
heard that.
So, you've been doing a great job. So, you know what?
Thank you.
Before we go on to what we're going to talk about, let's take a couple of phone calls because all our lines are lit. I want to make sure that we get these guys on. I'll give out the phone number just in case you guys don't see it on the screen. It's 888-659-3727. Let's see who this is. Hey, man, you're on the air. Hey, man, you're on the air. What can I do for you?
Hello?
I'll give you 2 more seconds, dude. No. Hey, man, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Doug from Chicago.
Doug from Chicago, welcome, man. What can we do
for
you?
How you doing, Doug?
Good. You know what? I'm not calling to talk. I got robbed today. Someone stole my iPod. And I have no way of listening to the show, and I thought maybe I could listen to it on my phone. Is there any way to do that?
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Yeah, you can go to Guys from Queens Network.
I got a computer.
No, you can go out. You can do it on your phone.
Use your phone.
Or you can actually.
I have a flip phone.
Yeah,
I don't
flip phone.
Oh,
yeah. No, you can't listen to it on your phone, dude.
Okay.
You can't listen to it on your flip phone.
It's a valiant effort, though.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm really.
I tried.
I mean, while we have you on, do you have a question, or you just want to figure out a way to listen?
I just wanted to enjoy the show.
Now, do you have any? I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
It just the show is like a Xanax for me. It's calming.
All right. So I'm trying to think. So you have you don't have a computer. You don't have an iPad.
No. And I have a flip phone, a jitterbug kind of phone.
You have a jitterbug. Holy shit! How old are you?
43.
Okay. You know what's funny? I want to get a jitterbug. I don't know what
the hell it is.
Basically, it's like an old person. It's basically a phone where you could just like call 911 or call, make regular phone calls.
Oh, with a giant button?
With a giant button.
Okay, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, it's like I think Alex Trebek advertises it.
Saturday Evening Post has an advertisement. New York Times sometimes.
Yeah, I would. When I go out to dinner, I'm like, you know what? I don't even want to bring my phone. I don't want to deal with it. I would love to just have a jitterbug. I think that's so funny. Dude, I really apologize, man. I wish I could have you.
No, I understand. I totally understand.
I mean, if we had 20 lines, I would let you hold on and listen on online. Is there? I mean, do you have a neighbor's house you can go to? Is there a? I'm trying to think. God, you don't have an iPad.
Does this sometimes get replayed the next day? Sometimes on iTunes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean we have archives. Yeah, it's definitely going to be archived. So for sure. Or you could listen it if you get your iPad. I'm sorry you lost your iPad. Someone stole it?
Yeah, in the locker room.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh man, at the gym. See,
yeah, at hockey. There's a guy at hockey we think that's been going in people's wallets and stealing stuff. So next time I go there, I'm going to keep my wallet and everything valuable locked in my car.
Isn't there some sort of an app where you can find out? You can kind of...
Actually, there is. Well, find my iPhone or find my iPad. You should be able to log in through your iTunes on your home computer.
But he doesn't have a computer.
Didn't have a computer.
I don't have a computer.
Jesus. Well, dude, I wish I would keep you on hold, but we don't have enough lines.
I guess I'll wait to get my fix and just try to get through these withdrawals.
Dude, I appreciate your loyalty. And
yeah, you know what? Hey, someone online is saying go to the local library and listen with earbuds on one of the PCs. All libraries have PCs.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, give it a shot.
I got a library 5 minutes away from here, so maybe I'll walk on over or something.
All right, man. Listen, I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the loyalty.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Take it easy.
Bye.
888-659-3727. Amazing, huh?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. Let's see who this is. Hey, you're on the air. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Spence. It's Carl from New York, alias Dirt Digger.
Hey, what's happening, Dirt?
Hey, what's up, man?
What's up there? Is that Joe Tronic there?
Yeah.
It would be, yes.
Yes. How you doing, guys?
We're good, man. What's going on?
Good.
Yeah, poor guy, huh?
First of all, I don't know what he's more upset about, not being able to listen to the show or having his iPad stolen.
I know, right? And it kills me. It's like the gym is supposed to be the, man's sanctuary. It's like you're not supposed to go and take another guy's shit when you're at the gym, right? Or at playing hockey.
It blows my mind. So crazy. But people do it. I remember I was a member of the New York Sports Club out in Midtown.
Yeah,
yeah.
And some guy took my wallet. Here's the funny thing is I just got out from working out, And he's by my locker, right? So I didn't know he was ripping me off because, you know, you just did a hard workout. Like, hey, what's up, dude? And as he's putting the wallet, I kind of see, you know, my color there, but it didn't really click until I saw, you know, my
I got the same wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
At least he was like, hey, man, I got the same wallet. Cool.
Yeah, I didn't get even a chance to do that. By the time I figured it all out, you know, after I wiped the sweat off my brow, he was gone. But it does happen. You know, yeah, there was an old trick that I do when I think once, and I wouldn't leave a wallet or anything in there, but just like some clothes, like if I had left my locker, you know, again, I'd take my wallet with me, is to put your dirty, sweaty clothes on top of your stuff. So
yeah.
If they're bold enough to go into your locker.
What about like getting like a padlock though?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that might work.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's
absolutely
what I would do. I don't know, Joe. What do you think about?
I think locks are probably a good idea. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Absolutely.
So what's happening, Dirk? Yeah. What can we do for you, man?
So I'm dying to ask this question. I think you and Joe touched upon this a while ago. So let me just recap. I was the one that did the A-cell extracellular matrix in the PRP.
Right.
You know, with...
Was it in the top or for the star?
You did it with Prasad, the $4,500 job.
Prasad, yeah, oh, right. Exactly, okay. Yeah.
I remember now.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm that guy. So things are going well for me, you know, as far as, you know, I'm back. I was the one that took the generic Propecia, and that was a mistake. And, you know, my hair is back on track with the brand name Propecia right now.
That's great.
Yeah. You know.
Good, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back to any generic, you know, forget about it. But things are going well. But I had a question, you know. What started me, and again, I had a hair transplant about in 2007, right, for my right side. And I just want to ask you guys, like, why, you know, that my major hair loss was only on the right side. That's where I had the transplant. Why did that happen? Is that some sort of disease or, you know? What's that? It's, you know, I saw it miniaturizing more on the right side. And my left side is very healthy, very healthy.
Dude, it's just, yeah. It really is just genetics and, you know, for the most part. And, you know, the thing is, you know, people, and I think that's what's confusing about looking at something like the Norwood scale or the Hamilton scale. You know, everything is so, it shows such symmetry in the patterns. And the vast majority of people really do not bald symmetrically. So you will see guys who have, you know, in some cases, significant asymmetry when it comes to their hairline recession. And some guys, it's just not the case. And, Joe, you've seen it a million times.
Yeah, I've seen it a million times. And a lot of times guys will actually what is the situation you're in? You said your miniaturization is on one side. Which side is it compared to the
other? The right side.
It's okay. So is it... Is it more of a recession on the side, like the temple recession, or is it just across the top?
No, temple recession.
Okay. Here's a fact that a lot of people don't realize. More people will have more severe recession on the right side than they will on the left side. In my estimation, it's probably 90 to 95% of all people that have a hairline recession, it'll be more on the right than on the left. It's natural. It happens to almost everyone.
Okay. Yeah, I think you mentioned that before a while ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because it drove me crazy. I mean, it started my journey on a hair, you know, with a transplant that started my journey.
You know what? You're the kind of guy that would come in that would typically say, I want my hairline to be symmetrical because I'm receding on this side, not on this side. And and it makes sense to ask for that. But the problem is that no one actually has a symmetrical hairline because no one's face is actually symmetrical. So if the face isn't symmetrical, your hairline can't be symmetrical. Everything's going to be slightly off, you know, one side a little bit, you know, a little bit higher, a little bit lower. But I understand the concept, but in reality, symmetry just doesn't exist.
And actually, to be honest, I think that some of the most natural hair transplants are really made to look, you know, slightly asymmetrical.
Yeah.
And it's when you see these really, you know, perfectly symmetrical hairlines that's kind of what draws the eye to the hair.
Yeah, it does actually. I agree with that. And you know, the hairlines that a lot of doctors will create are slightly asymmetrical, either by design or just that's just the way it turns out, because to make it symmetrical would be extremely difficult to begin with.
But now, so yeah. Now you okay, so your hair transplant worked out. You're in a better situation with getting back on Proscar or Propecia. I don't know. What are you on?
I'm on Propecia.
Propecia.
Good.
Do you think that the $4,500 ACEL and PRP did anything for you? Hello?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Spencer. That's hold on right. 1 second. I dropped my phone.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. No.
You got to stop drinking when you call the show, dude.
That was last night. You're right. You could just see me fumbling here.
So do you think that,
I would say that,
do you think that it's helped you at all?
I think that I don't think it has. I think it's more the Propecia in a combination with a little bit of the the Rogaine, the brand name Rogaine. I just top off the temples with it. You know, there's mm-hmm. no really major loss. There's just a little bit of mentorization that I see.
Right.
I think with a combination of the Propecia and a little bit of the Rogaine, definitely, I think probably not. It's safe to say.
How long ago did you have the PRP?
I had it about a year ago.
A year ago. And then how long ago did you switch to name brand medication?
Around the same time.
Okay.
So obviously it's hard to tell, but I can kind of tell from basic experience, just the way, cause I started to have the horseshoe effect on the top of my hair when I went on the brand, the generic.
Okay.
And that's totally gone. So, you know, it's tough to say because it's right around the same time, but,
here's the good news. Right. You know, you only lost $4,500. It's not like you had a bad hair transplant or, you know, you were disfigured mm-hmm. in any way. I do find it amazing though, that there are guys out there who are charging that much for PRP.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, I unfortunately thought of listening to the program a little bit later, you know.
No,
I think
not.
That if I'd have been informed, you know, and let this be a lesson to your listeners, you know, getting the right information, had I been tuned in, you know, before, I would have saved, obviously, one, a lot of money, a lot of mental heartache when my hair started to go astray.
Yeah.
Mm. And I really mean it. It's my hair right now has gone back from some recession to almost 100%. You know, I got
that's
a
fantastic.
Really, fortunately, I have a really thick set of hair. I have very thick, coarse hair, and that helps too. But.
And you were a great responder to you know, the brand name Finasteride, and that's the thing.
Correct.
You know, people think that we are. Well, I'm not going to say people think we're crazy, but if you speak to a pharmacist or you speak to a physician, they will. Most of these guys will tell you that. You know, brand name and generic, it's exactly the same. But the truth is, mm-hmm. we have too much anecdotal evidence showing that, mm-hmm. you know, guys who switch from brand name to generic, depending on the generic, seem to lose a lot of ground. So, do you have a paper bag over your head or something when you're talking to
us? I was going to say, it's like there's
what's going
it's
on?
Like a small tornado going on.
I apologize. I'm on the iPhone headset, so maybe that's what it is.
That's okay.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
We can hear you. It's just there's a lot of shuffling noise, probably brushing up against the microphone.
Yeah.
I'm just
taking out some Chipotle here, leftovers from earlier. Do you guys got that? You're out in Canada, right, Joe? And you're out in California. You guys have Chipotle out there?
We have Chipotle. Apparently they closed down like a whole bunch of Chipotles because of some sort of E. coli scare. So
enjoy your leftovers.
As I eat this meat and rice and beans.
So enjoy the beef burrito that you're having.
It's you know, it's so darn good, and I'm so single right now, and I'm still going to eat it regardless of that.
Yeah, I'm sure you're fine. Yours was open. Obviously, the place that you purchased it from was open, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it.
Out here in okay, Long Island here. So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the pharmacy, and what's interesting about that is you're so right about that. You know, when I went to the pharmacist, right, and I tried to renew my prescription with Propecia, right, the brand name Propecia, they were like, oh, no, just take the generic here. It's the same. I go, no, I do not want it. They were pushing the generic. Like, no, I do not, under no circumstances. Well, it's going to be more money. I don't care what it costs. Get me the brand name. And they went as far as my prescription, right? Because there is a checkbox that you have to check.
Yeah, your doctor has to check that it's brand.
Yeah, right. And unfortunately, he did not check that, and it cost me some, you know, delay a day or two. But I was like, look, I'm waiting. You're not going to convince me under enough circumstances for this generic.
Yeah, I mean, my insurance policy is, and actually, you know, I take Proscar, so I don't, I pay cash. And even though I'm at an age now where I can certainly put it on my insurance, since I started taking it at such a young age and since I was, you know, quasi-public figure, I didn't want to commit any type of insurance fraud. So I always paid cash for my Proscar.
Right.
As far as brand name stuff, I have, you know, a great insurance where doctor checks off the box, I can get any brand name for $25.
Isn't it required by law, like in some states, where if the patient says, I want name brand, they have to give you name brand?
No, they have to give it to you, but you will have to pay. Your insurance company won't cover it.
Okay. All right. I knew there's – yeah. I knew some way that the patient can demand it and they have to give it to you. I just wasn't sure about the checkbox thing. I didn't know how that worked.
Yeah, but there are some name brand, you know, drugs that, you know, you can get the generic. It'll cost you $10, $12, and the name brand will cost you $250.
Right.
But if your physician checks it off, depending on your insurance plan, I mean, now with the Affordable Care Act, a lot of things are changing. Fortunately for some people, unfortunately for others. But, you know, I'm a brand whore when it comes to medication. I mean, it's the pharmaceutical company that put this drug on the market. They did the R&D. You know, I'm not that comfortable with – I mean, there's a couple of decent generic – manufacturers, you know, Teva, at least Teva in Israel, makes some really great generic products. I'm not a huge fan of some of the Indian, you know, companies because I really, you know, if you actually look at the list of fillers, they can be so different from one drug to the next. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I didn't get my finasteride from online or anything like that. I got that at Rite Aid, reputable, like you said. I think you mentioned that doesn't mean anything.
Well, the only thing it means something as long as you get the brand name. You know, they will try.
Right,
they will always try to give you generic, and then they roll your eyes like it's a big pain in the ass for them to give you brand name. You wait to get the fucking brand name, and when you get your prescription from your doctor before you leave, you make sure that it says brand only.
They roll their eyes at anything nowadays because they're so busy they don't want to be bothered to do anything that's out of the ordinary.
Well, listen, man, we're going to let you enjoy your Chipotle, and we're going to go on to some other callers. But I'm glad that I'm glad that you're doing well, and I appreciate you calling in and letting us know. I mean, because I think your story is really important for all of you guys out there who have made the switch from. Whether you were on generic and then went to brand name and things got worse for you or vice versa. You know, once you're doing well with something, don't fuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right. Right on. I mean, that's it. You know, unfortunately, I learned a hard lesson, but thankfully I was able to recoup, right, when it comes to, you know, with the hair situation. Because, again, I said this before a few times. It drove me absolutely insane when I saw the regression. Just, I was really mentally, I was getting pomades, I was doing anything just to cover up that area.
Yeah.
Which is fine, you know, if I got it, if I have to put a little stuff on there, you know, like I know you say you do with your hair, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, when you say you spray paint, that's
I have no idea.
I don't do anything.
What? I do what?
Spencer, what's he talking about? I don't.
How dare you? All right, dude. Listen, Joe, what's with your mic?
I'm just trying to turn it down just a bit. I'm trying to find the nozzle. There we go.
Jesus.
Got it. Okay.
All right, man. Listen,
we're good. Thanks
for the call. I'm really happy that you recovered. That's a great story. It's really inspirational for those guys who have lost ground by making changes in their regime or their regimen.
Yeah, I love hearing that.
You know,
yeah.
And you went back, sure. And I think it's great, man. So keep us abreast of everything. And I would advise, you know, I probably would not get another $4,500 round of PRP with ACEL.
Definitely not. I am much more informed.
All right, man. Listen.
Regular listener.
All right. Well, good luck, and thanks
for calling in.
Take care.
Take care. All right, Joe.
All right. All right. And if you get E. coli, man, remember, you know, right away, if you don't feel well, you got to take a sample of you know what. Otherwise, you can't sue.
Right. Yeah,
just a little advice. It's a little advice.
Yeah.
I'm Jewish. I know these things.
You don't need to call us to tell us about it either.
All right,
just
man.
Take the advice.
All right.
Take it easy.
Take care, guys.
All right.
Yes, sir.
888-659-3727. The sad thing is that is the true statement. You need to actually have a hospital. If you go to a hospital, if you have food poisoning, there has to be a stool sample. Otherwise,
yes.
You have no case against the restaurant.
We're not talking a bar stool.
That's right.
We're talking anyway.
Yeah. I know this thing. And yes, the call was a little distracting because I don't know if it was his microphone or what.
It was his like what I've got on with the mic for, yeah, you know, it was shuffling around in his shirt.
He
or
was
something.
Coming in hot initially, which it sounded loud, but because I couldn't really hear him, so I brought his levels down and then but I think we got the message that
I heard a microwave in there too.
He's doing well.
Beep, beep.
I'm glad he's doing well. Let me give out the phone number, guys. 888-659-3727. I wonder if that dude actually did go to the library to listen to the show.
Well, he said it was just down the street. So yeah, I mean, I think it was a great idea. One of the guys on the on the chat room suggested it. Cali D3.
Well, dude, if you did actually make a quiet call from your jitterbug from the library to let us know that you actually did that, because that would be awesome. 888-659-3727 is the phone number.
I love hearing about the guy. The last caller, was his name Paul?
Yeah,
I think it was Paul. Yeah,
Paul, aka Dirk Diggler.
Yeah, Dirk Diggler.
Yeah,
validation for the generic versus name brand. It's, I mean, I've heard this hundreds of times now, in the past, probably what, since 2006 or 2007, I think. So much validation that, like you said, anecdotal evidence. I mean, I'm not writing this down, but
right.
So many people are telling me the same story.
Well, I hear it all the time, and I was always a guy that would, you know, I believe that finasteride is dose dependent. I'm not a physician, but every right. physician, including most physicians who I work with over the years, will say that I'm incorrect. I also believe that intermittent therapy works with mm-hmm. finasteride. I think that I'm proof positive of that. I take a 1.5-milligram dose about once a week, sometimes every 6 days or every 5 days, sometimes every 8 days, you know, really whenever I remember to take it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had guys on the show who are like, they don't understand how that works.
I first noticed this, I don't know how many years ago, there was a patient that was using the 5-milligram tablet daily.
Right.
Just because he thought it would be best.
Well, that's how I started. Actually.
Yeah, that's how you started. Yeah. And what told me that was dose dependent was the advice at the time, once this was discovered, was no, you don't need to take the full 5-milligram tablet. Just take a quarter tablet.
Right.
And 4 months later, his hair was gone.
His hair was gone, yeah.
It was gone. And he had been taking a 5-milligram tablet for 10 years already.
Yeah.
Good looking hair.
Yeah.
And 4 months.
Yeah.
Like a dandelion.
Well, you know, I'm very lucky because I actually at one point went all the way up to 7.5 milligrams because
Wow.
There was no talk about the dread shed. No one knew about, you know, the possibility of shedding. So I was a very quick responder. Within 3 months of starting the drug, my hair loss, you know, just basically stopped. And I regrew a significant amount of hair. It was very noticeable. The sides and especially the crown, just miniaturization process just started to reverse.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, this shit really works. And then in about eighth month mark, I remember it was summertime, I went through a tremendous shed. And it freaked me out. I had no one to talk to about it because no one was really using the drug.
Yeah.
You know, there were no doctors to talk about it with because they had no experience.
I'm surprised you stayed on it.
Well, not only did I stay on it, I upped my dosage to 7.5 milligrams. I had no adverse side effects. And things kind of, you know, eventually, it took a few months, slowed down again. And I was able to stabilize things. And then as I stayed on it, I was just reading more and more about, on average, it takes about 2 weeks before your DHT levels get back to baseline after you stop taking the drug.
Right.
So I thought to myself, well, if it takes a full 2 weeks, why do I need to put this drug into my system every day? So let me start doing it every other day. And I started to do that. And then I started to do it every third day. And then I started to do it every fourth day. And then within, I'd say, 4 years of being on the drug, I just started to take it once a week. And it's been almost 20 years.
It's maintained.
You know? So I'm definitely a believer in intermittent therapy. And I also think there's a genetic component to it. Like this guy, his body needed that 5 milligram dose.
Yeah.
Every day. That's what worked for him. So when you hear doctors who are quoting the clinical trial and the study saying that, you know, going from 1 milligram to 5 milligram didn't make any significant clinical difference. That could be true. But again, anecdotally, we do see these changes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is. I'm happy that this guy is doing well.
Yeah, me too. And I'm glad he's doing well, but it's unfortunate that the PRP and switching everything over to name brand was done at roughly the same time because then you can't really – I mean, he may be having a good result from the PRP as well. It's just you can't tell at this point.
You know why?
It's unfortunate.
And you're right about that. But I, for some reason, just by virtue of where he had it done, I am not convinced that it's the PRP.
Did he tell us last time where he had it done?
He did, and okay. You know, and I just I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this particular doctor,
yeah.
But I just, from what I understand, and from you know having some, inside knowledge of the type of PRP this particular clinic is offering, it might not be the right PRP for hair.
Right.
You know,
right.
So,
you know, and I didn't want to get too far into this because I didn't want to sound like I was pimping it. But
yeah.
I in the back of my mind was Dr. Cooley, right?
Yeah.
Because he's been working with us quite a bit. And
right.
I have been to his clinic and I spent some time talking to him about his PRP. And I asked him, okay, why is it different with you? And, you know, a lot of basic questions. And he spent a lot of time explaining it to me. Most of which I've forgotten, but
yeah.
But he was telling me that you know Joe Grieco was onto something, and I believe that he does something similar as Joe Grieco.
It's Greco
or Greco.
I just think I need to correct you on that one.
You're going to be that guy. Aren't
I had to be that guy.
Yeah, got to be that.
How
guy.
Can I let you say Grieco? It's like Richard Grieco.
Like what's he going to do?
Yeah,
call up. It's Greco. Greco, damn it. Anyway.
Listen, Joe is honestly, and again, I have Joe is a, he's a PhD and he's a physician's assistant. He's a researcher,
yeah.
And he's been in the hair transplant field for a long time. He works with his brother. He used to work with Ron Shapiro many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a lot of the initial research. You know, he was the guy that really went full force into getting the literature out there and working with some of the the Italian guys who got the initial literature out there. And to be honest with you, it's, you know, I've, like I said, there's a family member. She goes down every 4 months. I mean, the difference in her hair is so significant that you can't ignore it.
Yeah. And keep in mind, I was like a big skeptic. Like for years, I told people it was kitchen sink science. I have no problem admitting that because that's what I thought. But then, you know, I've tried to have more of an open mind about things in the past year and a half. And when I was talking to Dr. Cooley about it, he was showing me all the information he has on it, including like dozens and dozens of photos. I have to say, I mean, I know what I'm looking at when I look at photos. I mean, I am a photographer. I have studied this like crazy, and I could tell there was nothing funny going on with the photos.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not giving it, you know, across the board endorsement, but there is something to it if it's done at the right place.
Right. And that's, I mean,
that's why I look at it.
That's the thing. I actually did a video, which I could I have to find it, but with Joe Greco a while ago for another show that I'm doing. And we were talking about just, you know, that the fact that all PRP is not created equal. We were discussing the different types of PRP that are out there. And there are companies that are making PRP kits. And each kit is different. Each kit provides a different level of growth factor, the ability to create growth factors when you put it into the centrifuge. And, you know, so it's all, you know, everyone is providing a slightly different protocol. And sadly, you know, what happens is it's just like any other doctor's office. You know, these companies go into the doctor's office, whether it's a drug manufacturer or a device salesperson. They go in there, they make their pitch, they sell their wares, and the physician may not know it. They just think, well, it's all the same.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are giving us good deals. They're taking us out to dinner. We're going to have a free meal. And we'll start using their PRP. And that's just the way that it works.
That is the way it works with treatments and medication.
Well, I can tell you that in the world of in mainstream cosmetic surgery, PRP is taking off like fucking gangbusters. These vampire facelifts. Now a lot of facial plastic and cosmetic surgeons are offering PRP for hair loss. It's a fucking mess.
You know, and it couldn't have come along at a better time to be able to utilize and capitalize on the name vampire.
Yeah.
You know, vampire facelift that automatically gets people going, ooh, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, I want some of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting. The guy that that coined that, he's actually a pretty well-known plastic surgeon. And he's no slouch. But you know, here's the thing that bothers me about the industry in general. When you think about, say, breast implants, for instance, and we'll get back into hair in a second. You know, there's a certain type of breast implant that was developed by, I'm not going to promote the manufacturer, but they now are referred to as gummy bear implants because the gel has the texture of
the visual just
of a gummy bear. And there's a well-known plastic surgeon here in the Los Angeles area who coined that phrase.
Yeah.
And that phrase took off in the media. It's out there through all of these, you know, consumer-oriented websites, which I have a lot of opinions about some of those sites. And, you know, they've really taken the medicine out of medicine. They've taken the medicine out of cosmetic surgery. And obviously that's happened in this end of cosmetic surgery. When it comes to hair, it is a complete commodity. When we go online, we're on the message forums. These guys are talking about price. They're talking about, you know, how many grafts they can get, you know, for their money. And I think a prime example of what's happening, and we talk about this all the time, is, you know, I mean, you are working with a Turkish physician right now, but we see what's happening in Turkey. It is about to happen in other places. It's happening in India. It's going to happen in Mexico.
Yep.
And these shops are opening up, and it all becomes just a complete commodity. There's no medicine involved. It's what can I get for my dollar?
Well, what they're going to start focusing on is turning it into a spa. Well, they already have been focusing on turning it into a spa environment, so that you know, you said taking the medicine out of it. You nailed it. I mean, it's no longer medicine; it's a spa treatment.
That's exactly what it is. You know,
that's what they're going for.
It's funny. I just sent you an application that I got today. Okay, now it was
it was
a request for an application, and it was from a Turkish company that they do dental work, they do hair transplants, they do all this stuff.
Yeah.
I am not joking, and that's why I'm sending – now that we're working more closely together, like I would normally never send these out to anybody. But we get these applications almost daily, either from Turkey, India, different parts of Europe. I get a lot of applications, a lot of neo-grafters here in the U.S.
I bet.
So
yeah.
there is an article that was written – we spoke about it last week in the local hair transplant trade paper. The Hair Transplant Forum International, written by two guys who you would think would have a better grasp of the online world.
You'd think.
But the truth is, you know, if you actually read the article, you would see they have absolutely no grasp. And they were involved. One is like heavily involved in the online world. A guy that posts on all of the forums, a guy that has been involved in the online message forum game since the beginning. And another guy who was involved for a long time who can really no longer be involved for a couple of reasons. And, you know, the main focus was, you know, sadly, a lot of the concern was, are people getting leads? Are these types of message forms still necessary in the industry? Mm-hmm. And are they becoming oversaturated and diluted because so many more people are being recommended by these different forums and different outlets?
Right.
Now, one thing that I found interesting is, A, like I said, I show you these applications. If I just took half of the applications every year, you talk about a list.
Talk about a list as long as your arm.
I would have well over 1,000 physicians just in the last couple of years.
Right.
Easily. And it would have appeared selective. I would have just chosen 50% of these guys.
But that's the thing is that, you know, what they're talking about is that they're saying that there is no selection anymore. It's not selective to be on you know, these lists. And they're saying that there is no scrutiny, there is no review. It's just submit and you're in. If you can pay, you're in.
And that's what they're claiming. You know what? I'm not here to defend any other recommended list or any other website, but I will tell you that I am sure that these other websites get many applications as well.
Of course.
And you know, in all fairness, while there have been some tensions between different websites, I mean, if these guys are applying to us, they're applying elsewhere as well, or at least some of them are, you know?
So, I can't do there. Yeah.
Yeah. So while I do know that there are other websites that may take on more members than we are willing to take on, I find it interesting that one of the questions or one of the thoughts that – at least what, you know, something that I may think of if I was writing an article like this would be, well, maybe the fact that there are more doctors involved just means that the industry as a whole has gotten better and we've been able to accept more physicians into the organization as opposed to the original 11 who were doing follicular unit transplantation back in the day. So while these guys believe that these lists are becoming diluted and they may not be getting as many leads because that's in some cases that's their main concern, and I would say that the vast majority of IHRS members do not think that way. They understand the value of supporting the IHRS and being a part of what we do. They understand the value of being able to display that seal, and they understand the importance that how important it is to the consumer to see that they're part of what, you know, what we're doing.
But also to be able to explain what the seal means.
Exactly.
Right? Because it's not just a seal that anyone can get. So
it
blows my mind. It's like if you have such a great resource behind you or you're part of such a great resource, the IHRS, you should brag about it. You should talk about it. You should say what it means as a clinic to be a part of this.
Well, and I think that goes back to the whole commoditization of the field because, you know, there are websites out there that kind of created this lead generation type of concept.
Yeah.
As opposed to what we do, and, you know, we created an organization. So especially amongst those who are not part of the IHRS, they kind of lump all these websites, you know, together.
Of course.
So, one guy who is who wrote the article is not part of the IHRS. One guy is part of the IHRS, but I think he resents the fact that he's part of the IHRS or that he feels that the need to be a part of the IHRS or that the consumer looks at him, you know, with, you know, with maybe a little, you know, more reverence, and it kind of adds a certain amount of stature. You know, and I'm not a physician, and I always kind of thought that this guy might resent that a little bit. And I'm very open about it. I'm open about it with him as well.
Yeah.
This particular doctor is part of it because he's good at what he does.
Of course.
That's it. Otherwise, I would not allow him to be a part of it.
Well, you know, here's something interesting, okay? You said something – I want to go back to something you said is they think that you know, they're not getting as many leads and it's becoming too saturated, you know, lists being whatever. But here's what they fail to recognize. And this is part of what I do. I try to explain it to some of the doctors is that it may seem like it's getting to be more of a crowded field, but it's because it is. And the reason it is becoming more crowded is because there are more doctors entering the field because FUE makes it easier to get involved.
Right.
Overall. And so you have a much larger sea of people to weed through, but you also have more potential excellent doctors coming through because they are exposed to the industry of hair restoration. You have more people coming through that have the talent to do some great work that you might not have seen 10 years ago simply because the cost of getting into a strip operation was significantly higher than it is now to get into an FUE operation.
100%. And, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, like, how does it not cross their mind that in general the field has just gotten a lot better? There's still there's a lot of hacks out there.
Absolutely.
We reject people every single week. But in general, the field has gotten a lot better. And if you really think about my original list, which was 11 doctors in the Ball of Truth, compared to what it is today, when we launched the IHRS, we were able to launch with about 30-some-odd doctors.
Mm-hmm.
In 14 years, I've only accepted maybe another 24 or 25 doctors.
Yeah.
Think about that. And think about how many applications we get. And, you know, in the very short period of time that we have been doing the show, I will every once in a while send you one just, you know, for shits and giggles to show you.
Yeah.
These are coming in every single day.
Well, so it was pretty funny.
If I were to sit these two guys down and show them our database, there would be no way in hell that anyone would say. And, you know, actually, you know, to be fair, they actually did a little bit of a poll. So some anonymous physicians are the ones who might believe that, you know, we're just accepting anybody that applies to the organization. I'm not saying that these two doctors believe that.
Right.
But it's really interesting to me. And again, I'm not here to defend anybody else in the field who has a recommended list. But there's no doubt in my mind that, yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe they have different criteria than we do. But and I refuse to, you know, create a list that has 150 doctors on it at this point unless there's 150 great doctors, then sure. But
That's
not going to happen. But in all fairness, if I'm getting these many applications, there's no doubt that other websites that where physicians believe they're going to get some notoriety, they must be getting applications as well.
Damn, Skippy.
You know? So and I have to be fair about that.
Well, of course you do. And, yeah, but I want to stress, like, you know, there's also the other aspect of the fact that you have the old guard slowly moving out, right?
They're not just moving out; they're dying out. You know,
dying out. But 10 years ago,
you were at the last meeting. Half these guys are hunched over at this point.
In 2013, in San Francisco, that's when my eyes were open. I'm like, who are all these people? And then, what happened to his back?
Yeah,
yeah. That's what was going on.
How is this person performing surgery?
So 2 years later, just a month and a half ago in Chicago, there were even fewer doctors that I recognized, and more doctors I didn't recognize. And what I've been learning is that, you know, like I was about to say, 10 years ago, it was all strip surgeons, maybe one FUE. I don't know. 10 years ago, did you have any FUE?
Yeah,
surgeons?
We had 10 years ago, we had
Dr. Feller was doing
Feller, FUE, Bauman, Cole.
Yeah. So a few guys were getting into it, and yeah. But nowadays, it's like you have so many new guys coming in that are, you know, basically taking the limelight and doing incredible work. Like some of the guys I started working with, even 5 years ago, you wouldn't have heard of them.
Dude, look at Lupin Zula.
Oh, my God.
The guy's incredible.
That guy's a machine.
So now is that a guy that one of these, you know, the doctors that wrote this article thinks that was just allowed to be a part of the IHRS? I can tell you this, and I'm going to say this this is going to be a declarative statement. This guy can transplant circles around some of these dudes, man.
I agree 100%.
It's not even a joke. You know what's – this is what's really funny. One of the guys that wrote the article, he used to work for a large chain clinic. And I remember we had had the ball tooth list, and then we switched over to the IHRS format, mm-hmm. you know, developed it into the consumer organization. And I did not invite him to be a part of the group. He wrote me an email, and it was kind of nasty. And those were his exact words. He said, "I can transplant circles around the people you have in your list."
Yeah.
And that was basically how he applied. And that is a God's honest truth. And you
most
know,
most people are like, "Please, I'd like to be a part of your organization." This guy's like, "Who the hell do you think you are, not having me part of your organization?"
And you know, I keep everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so and this guy actually wrote was a co-author of this article. So I find it fascinating that basically he came to me and said, you know, like, how can I not be invited to be a part of this group? And now there's this sense of entitlement, a sense of resentment. Listen, all I can tell this particular
it's like a spoiled kid.
This is all I can tell this particular. All I can tell this particular doctor is this: he's doing good work. He's helping patients. I will continue to work with him because I think that he is, you know, one of the best at what he does. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just enjoy that. Enjoy that fact. Enjoy that what we've done over the years. We completely changed this field. And I think what happens sometimes is that some of the physicians forget that. They forget the importance. And, you know, when you're looking at this article, and I'm not going to read it. I don't want to get too put out too much intimate knowledge, you know, of what's going on. People can find it on their own. But
just take 10 years to look for it.
Yeah. Well, it's not easy to find their site. But what the old guard has to understand, what the ISHRS has to understand is that, you know, we're all here to stay. You know, we've made this industry move in the direction that it's moved in. And it's moved in a really good direction. You know, it's been a kind of a tough ship to move. But, you know, what you've done over the years, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that, you know, you basically created this entire, I want to say genre, this entire
format
of how to present online, how to present patients online.
Yeah.
You know, everyone basically copies your format now.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, the light blue background, the, you know, the right angles, all that. I mean, it was just, you know, way ahead of its time, and it was a game changer. So instead of continuing to fight us, they should just embrace what we do. And, you know, maybe they should, you know, it's funny. I'm invited to speak at different conferences, you know, cosmetic surgery conferences. I was invited to the WebMD Heroes conference, which is it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. Congratulations on that.
There's no one in hair that I think at least none of these guys.
Yeah.
That would be invited to be involved with something you know, that big. And no one's ever asked any of us You know, and I've been doing, I founded the American Hair Loss Association, the IHRAS. You know, maybe if you were to pick our brains a little bit, you'd be able to help, you know, the people in the ISHRS, the old guard, would get a better understanding of the reality of the industry and what consumers are really looking for, and not look at everything online as a fucking attack.
Well, you got a problem getting past or getting through to this or getting through these doctors on this, and that is they're still making lots of money, so they can bitch and complain, but that's all they're doing. They don't really want to do anything about it because the money's still coming in.
Well, I can tell you this though, within the next 36 months, the entire I would say 24 months, but I'm gonna be liberal when it comes to this. Next 36 months, the entire industry is going to change. These guys that have been involved for over a decade, I mean, they're going to either have to make a move or they're not. They're going to be completely irrelevant.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that they don't see that. You know, there's a couple of people, you know, I read a couple of articles, you know, like about the future of the industry. Bill Rasm actually wrote an interesting article in the latest edition of the Forum, which is, I think, is relatively compelling, and I think that physicians should actually really take a look at that and take it seriously. But the industry is moving in a direction that the ISHRS will not be able to keep up with.
They're having trouble now.
They are having trouble now. And the only reason, but they don't have to. You know what? When you think about how many members they have, they can do so much.
Oh, the potential for – yeah. I mean, they've got, what, I think 1,200 members now. And it's interesting. I had a conversation with a high-ranking unnamed official in Chicago, and I was talking to her about something. Well, I was actually talking to her about my covert operations in Turkey, and her eyes got huge, and she was so excited about what I had been telling her, what you know, this endeavor I had undertaken, and she has. She has the potential to take what I've done and actually do something with it. And she was telling me, she said, please call me next week. Send me everything you got. I'd love to work with you on this.
Nothing
ever. I sent her what I had, description of what it meant and what it involved. Zero.
Listen, I know who you're talking about, and it's someone who I've worked with for many years. And I think she is really, you know, an outstanding physician and hair transplant surgeon.
Agreed.
But the truth is that they just need people in the organization, in my view, that can actually get shit done. And since I've been involved in this field, I can honestly say that I have never seen such a
cluster.
It's like the fucking Keystone Cops. You know,
they are
completely impotent when it comes to so much that they want to try to control. And, you know, when they've come to me and they've asked me my advice, and, you know, one guy and I, you know, this is really, you know, what's his name? Not Jeff Epstein, Ed Epstein, when he was president of the ISHRS, and he wanted to talk to me. He's a really great guy.
He's awesome.
I always had a great relationship with him. And he came to me and he wanted to talk about, you know, the neograft, and he wanted to talk about what was happening with, you know, these per diem techs. And I explained to him, and that you're talking about 2008, 2009, that if you guys really have a concern about this and you really think it's not in the patient's best interest, this is how you have to handle it. And if you handle it this specific way, then it will not evolve.
Right.
And part of that was putting information on each individual website, you know, that would be declarative and would be compelling. And then really combining all that information, because no one's reading the ISHRS website. That's just the way that it is.
Exactly.
So, of course, after discussion, all great ideas, they have 10 fucking meetings about something, and then, of course, they can't do it because everyone's fucking afraid to be sued.
Of course.
So now they put out a mission statement this year or in 2014 about warning people about unlicensed technicians performing hair transplant surgery.
Yeah.
The fucking horse is out of the barn, man. It's done. It's too late. It doesn't mean anything. They can't do anything anymore.
No.
They had the opportunity. They had 1,200 people, a force to be reckoned with. But, you know, it was like herding cats. You know? So how many people have been harmed over the years because of their inability to, you know, to work cohesively, to work together right. towards a common goal?
Well, look, I mean, I've got some other opinions as to why it's difficult to get things done. But the bottom line is, like you said,
am I being too blunt? I'm just being honest. You know,
you said it's an impotent organization. I agree, only because they try to get things done. The current or outgoing president, Sharon Keen, she's had some, I think, some strong ideas that could have been moved forward if they were pushed forward properly. They could have been pushed forward if they were pushed forward 3-4 years ago.
She's a smart lady. I mean, every president has had some really good thoughts. You know, she didn't come to me this year, but some of the past presidents have, and I would give them advice, even though a lot of the people in the ISHRS really disliked me because I kind of separated who I believed to be the great surgeons from the not so great surgeons, and that was not, you know, that was never popular.
No, of course not.
But I can tell you this: if they put me in charge, shit would get done. It would be a completely different industry.
Can you imagine if you and I both were given free rein on this?
Yeah.
Like, how do we get our message out?
It would be ridiculous. It would be ridiculous. But they can't do it.
Come back in 6 months. You'll see. You know, what do you do?
But whatever. You know, it is what it is. You know, you get people who they have running the organizations who are like in PR and, you know, they have interesting meetings. And, you know, I think it's a great place.
It's meetings, though.
But I think it's a great place for people to get educated and for new physicians to learn.
Meetings.
And, you know.
I've never, look, you have meetings if you're in sales. You have meetings if you're you know, trying to get something done, but you want to get it done. You don't have five meetings just to do one thing.
Well, I'm talking about their conferences, but yeah, as far as like, you know, the bureaucracy that's involved in these organizations, it's insane. I mean,
it is.
This isn't government, you know what I mean? These are a bunch of doctors getting together, creating this medical society, and for, you know, everyone to, you know, for all these yays and nays and all these meetings and, you know, these behind the door bullshit meetings that,
right,
you know, it's unfortunate.
It is.
There's actually they have an FUE research committee, and you see some of the guys who are on the committee, they've never extracted a fucking graft in their life, or they just started doing FUE.
Right. Yeah. That's an
it's amazing to me.
It's amazingly funny.
Yeah.
And disturbing at the same time. These people are in charge of these committees. I never understood that.
So, you know, this is the way that I feel. And this is, you know, to really run an effective organization. I'm an entrepreneur. You know, to run an effective organization, it can't be a democracy.
No.
You know, there has to be some sort of order. And shit has to get done. And there also can't be fear. As an organization, if you are fearful of making decisions that in the end these decisions will benefit the field, will benefit patients, will benefit the evolution of your industry. I mean, you know, it's funny. Someone told me this. This is a big shot in another industry. Your friend just said he's watching us live. Then why don't you call in, dude?
I heard that. Yeah, call in.
Yeah. And he just fucked up my train of thought. Motherfucker. He's probably drunk, too. What was I saying? It was good, too.
I could tell.
It was really good. But my point is this. You want to get shit done. You can't have fear.
Yeah, you're saying it's not a democracy.
Yeah. You just can't. This is it. This is what we're going to do. This is in the best interest of our patients. We can't allow this group of doctors to harm people and allow them to be part of our organization. We can't do it out of fear of being sued that we're excluding them from being part of the group.
Right.
That's fucking ridiculous.
It is.
You know? It's ridiculous.
The whole industry is ridiculous. How far you want to go on this?
You think about some of the guys that have won these gold and platinum follicle awards. It's like, what the fuck are you thinking? I mean, do you know how much damage some of these people have done?
Yeah, I know.
It's insanity.
Look, I've watched, you know, sitting in the clinics I've worked in, I've watched these the recipients being announced. Meanwhile, I've got one of their patients sitting, you know, in the OR 30 feet away getting their work repaired.
Oh, yeah. But there are guys who are like grandfathered into, you know, like the original guys in the organization, grandfathered into, you know, this board certification, the American Board of Hair Restoration Surgery, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, who have some of the worst reputation. I mean, they've done some of the worst damage in the world, destroyed lives. And they are revered when they're in these meetings. They're revered like they are gods. And then when everyone scatters, they're all talking behind each other's backs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's – yeah, they're all stabbing each other in the back until that 1 week every year.
Yeah.
In some exotic location like Chicago.
Right.
Where they're not stabbing each other in the back. They're slapping each other's backs.
But, well, and that's very funny that you say that. But you know, here's my thing. For the doctors who are watching this and who are going to watch this and who are going to call me about this, it doesn't have to be this way. You guys collectively can do so much good. And I know that maybe you think you are to some degree, but I have to tell you, in my view, as a collective, because you've turned, you know, a blind eye to so much, you've done so much damage, in my view, to so many unsuspecting, vulnerable hair loss sufferers. It's, you know, it's something that's, it's really difficult to articulate how devastating turning that blind eye has been over the last, you know, since I've been in the industry.
Well, a lot of it, I think, comes from, like I was saying, the comfort level that a lot of these doctors are in. That's, what's the saying, the emperor's new clothes?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, they it's a comfort zone that allows them to be blind to the reality of their surroundings.
Well, you know what? Let's fucking change that. You know, and this is the thing.
We're trying.
Well, here's the thing. We did change that. The reason this article is written is because, you know, the bottom line is the consumer now basically dictates what happens in this industry, which is in a sense, it's unfortunate. Because yeah. I really believe that if physicians had the fucking balls to go out there like Dr. Kara Dennis does and speak his mind and say, you know what? This is the reality of this. FUE is, you know, there's a very low barrier to entry in most cases. You know, when you're doing handheld and motorized, you know, handheld motorized FUE, low barrier to entry. More and more companies and cosmetic surgeons are getting into it because it's so much easier to perform this type of surgery than it is to perform good strip. You don't need the infrastructure. You don't need the staff, yada, yada, right. yada. These are things that the consumer doesn't really understand because it's being presented as this scarless, minimally invasive surgery. You know, listen, I'm obviously all for FUE, you know. I was the guy that pushed FUE in North America. That's it.
It's your fault. It's your damn fault.
And you know what? I have to tell you the truth. I really, and that's no joke. I believe that, you know, and I had no idea that this would happen. I really believe that when Ray Wood showed me this technique and I pushed it through with Bob Bernstein and Bill Rassman and John Cole and Feller, had these guys really look at this seriously. I looked at it as an adjunct procedure that was only going to make hair transplantation a much safer place.
Right.
And I'm an idiot because, you know, at least a couple of the guys initially just ran with it and then kind of pitted FUE against FUT. Now, it took a long time before that evolved, but now that is the big move.
It is the big move, but you weren't an idiot. You just didn't imagine that people would take advantage of this like they did, right?
No, I didn't. And
how can you? Because it's like when I went to Turkey twice this year and I saw what was going on, to say my mind was blown is the biggest understatement of the year. It takes hair transplant surgery to a completely different level. I mean, it's a Euro per graft. It's 20 people in one giant room at the same time getting hair transplant surgery.
It's insane.
There's no word to describe it.
That's going to be happening. It's already happening south of the border, but it's going to be happening in a bigger, larger scale south of the border. Happening in India. The sites are really now focusing on more. They're almost becoming these cosmetics surgery tourism sites.
Well, like I said, it's a spa cell, not a hair transplant cell.
Right. Listen, right? And you know what? I've gotten some shit for being honest about my thoughts as far as the future of the industry and how robotic surgery is going to be the future of this industry. But I should say it's going to be the safe future of this industry. Mm-hmm. Because the future of this industry is going to be robotics and the tech run clinics. That's the future of the industry.
I think you're right.
And
I think that there'll always be a place for the niche, hands-on boutique clinic where the doctor does everything. But in general, I think that robotics, be it the artist or something similar, like you say, will eventually come in and make. I think I see hair transplant surgery becoming no different than 1-800-DENTIST.
First of all, yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. But I personally believe that robotics in general is going to make it a more consistent, safer procedure, because what's happening is more and more novices are getting into the field. More and more cosmetic surgeons, guys who just want to increase their cash, their revenue stream, are being offered these turnkey opportunities. It's a much higher barrier to entry to buy one of these robots. And as the robot gets better and better, eventually it's going to be, to me right now, hands down, if it's a new guy with a neograft and a new guy with a robot, the new guy with the robot is going to perform a much better procedure.
Right, because it's not the doctor with a robot. It's the robot.
It's the robot.
Yeah, and 100%. The robot has so much more experience from, I can say it, but yeah.
Well, exactly. I mean, the trial and error.
Yeah, trial and error.
It's a situation where, I think a lot of the guys in the industry, a lot of the physicians, are very short-sighted. There's a few that I think they're going to be turning their clinics into like Turkish clinics.
God, I hope not.
It's absolutely going to happen. There are the plastic surgeons. I speak to one on a regular basis through Facebook who has a neograft, a really nice guy, board certified plastic surgeon, is actually doing pretty decent eyebrows with a neograft. He's got good hands, but he really wants to increase his hair practice. And I just keep trying to explain to him, dude, you gotta understand, if you fuck somebody up, I mean, you're going to possibly lose everything you've built. So you gotta know what you're doing. This isn't as cut and dry as these salespeople say it is.
Right.
And that's what's happening to the industry. So anyone who doesn't believe it, the guys that I came up with in this industry, the guys who just texted me, who don't see what's happening and changing, they got to open their eyes, man, because you got another 2 to 3 years. And I can tell you that there's going to be 1,000 new guys, at least here in North America, performing hair transplants who never, ever considered surgical hair restoration because they're being offered these incredible opportunities.
Because it's so easy to get into.
Exactly.
I was telling you, when I was in Chicago, I was talking to a doctor, a plastic surgeon from Central America, and we're standing at a table. It was Dr. K was over here, and I think Dr. Bazanga was there, and this guy from Central America. So, talking to everyone, I look at him. I was like, so how long have you been doing hair? And he goes, I don't do hair, at least not yet.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. He goes, I'm going to. I'm a plastic surgeon, and so I thought I'd come up here and, you know, learn a bit about it. And
but you know, he actually had to join the ISHRS.
No, you don't have to join to be there.
Oh, you don't have to join.
No, you just pay a fee.
As a physician.
Yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to be a member. You can pay the fee, which is more as a non-member than if you are a member.
I probably should have known that, but I didn't.
So you should go next year. It's in Panama, but I'm going. But yeah, so he said to me, point blank, I want to learn more about it and find out where I can take a weekend course so I can start offering it. I want to switch everything over to hair.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I looked at him and I said, you are an idiot, and it's because of you that this industry's got such a black sheep type of image. And he just looked at me, he's like, what? He couldn't believe I said that to him.
Yeah.
But I blurted it out. I didn't really mean to offend him, but at the same time, it's like someone had to say it.
Well, listen, it's the truth, but it's also because of some of the, you know, the old guard, the old school guys that are still, they're still working. It's unbelievable. It's kind of scary. Some of these guys are like 70 years old.
Yeah.
They're still hustling hair.
There's one I saw who literally was walking around and he's got a hunchback now.
But I mean, they're still hustling hair at this age.
Yeah.
You would think they would have made enough money by now. That's bad planning, dude.
Some of them, one of them I know personally very well, he just loves what he does. He just loves what he does. And, you know, if you're old enough to retire, but you still love what you're doing and you can still get up every day, you can still do the same job, then God bless you, you know. But some of them should retire.
You know what?
I will say that much. Some of them should retire.
I think a lot of them should retire. Listen, dude, let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
Phone number is 888-659-3727. The guy that texted us, he should call in, dude. Don't be afraid to call. You got a lot of good stories.
He's got some of the best stories.
You should definitely give us a call, 888-659-3727. I'm Spencer Coburn here with Joe Tillman. We'll be right back after this. Stay with us.
The winner of 7 prestigious Golden Forehead Awards.
My family's always arguing. It always starts off innocent, and then it gets vicious right away. So I was like, hey, looks like you're losing some hair. At least my wife's not a whore.
Spencer David Coburn.